15. Awesome. Hi everyone. I'm Nadine. I'm a compulsive eater, a bulimic, and a restrictor. So I just want to get my stats. I've been in OA for 5 years. January of 2020 was my abstinence date. I've been abstinent from bulimia and restrictive behaviors and binging for 5 years. And then my newer abstinence of the last year and a half has been recreational processed sugar. And so that's kind of my brand of OA, so to speak, because we're all different varieties. But I'm going to stick to kind of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, because that just helps me structure my story. But I, sorry, I'm gonna just change to gallery so I can see you guys. Okay, cool. So I grew up in a family of compulsive eaters for certain, and it was particularly the women in my family. And so I grew up with a mom who very sadly hated her body and hated the way that she engaged with food, but she did not have access to this program for whatever reason. And so my sister, myself, and my mom were the projects of the family because we were always overweight when we were growing up. And so I was put on a diet as early as 9, and I became very conscious of my body as early as 9. And that makes me really sad now that I'm 32 years old because I'm like, God, 9's kind of too early to be aware of your weight and to be aware of trying to control food. And so that's kind of where life and this disease started for me. I have really vivid memories of like walking up and down the stairs of my grandparents' house to go back for more and more and more food. Like this vivid memory was staying up till 3 a.m. with my sister, just doing this for hours. And my sister could keep up with me pretty well. But what was strange, and this has been true throughout my entire life, I can always go a little bit further than other people around me. And so she maybe tapped out at 2 a.m. I was going till 3 a.m. And I definitely used food to manage my emotions growing up. Like many of us, I grew up with a lot of trauma. And so that was the way that I was able to self-soothe. That was my parent. That was food was kind of like one of the things I heard in a meeting that really resonated with me is food worked at one point in my life. It was in some ways a savior for me. It's just eventually it led to like incomprehensible demoralization, which I'll get to later. So then when I was 12, I went through a growth spurt and I also got the flu over a winter break and I lost a bunch of weight. And for the first time in my life, I was societally thin. And all of a sudden, all the boys at school noticed, and all of a sudden, all the girls at school noticed. And I got a lot of positive feedback for that. And that was the first time it started this neural pathway in my brain, which is thin equals happiness, and thin equals power, and thin equals everyone liking you. And so I pretty much spent the next, I guess, 15 years up until I got into program trying to manage my weight at any cost. So I know people have different experiences with bulimia and anorexia. Mine was a way of managing my compulsive eating. So I do identify first and foremost as a compulsive eater. I just went to any lengths to not show it on my body. And so, yeah, bulimia, I thought I had like solved the world's problems when I first threw up. I was like, oh my God, this is how you do it. You can eat whatever the hell you want, and then you just have to get rid of it. And then you can go to school and look like everyone else does. And so I kind of felt like I had some genius hack for how to bypass the issue of compulsive eating. And so, yeah, that kind of went on for the next decade. And so, where you guys found me, I was 27. I was living in New York at the time, and I was agoraphobic. I was really anxious leaving the house. All I would do to leave would pretty much be to go get my binge foods. But what was the most tricky about this is I had moved in with my now husband. And so it was the first time I lived with someone. And in a long time, I lived alone for most of my 20s because I wanted to be able to throw up and eat and binge by myself. It was the first time I felt like someone was watching me. And so that I just hit this point where I was like, I don't think it's possible to keep going the way that I'm going. I don't know how I'm going to manage this thing that I have. I, by the way, didn't call it a disease at the time. I had no idea OA existed. But my husband at that time was in AA. And so one winter was December 2019, right before I got into the program. The way I bottomed out was I was on a hike with his family and I was at the back of the line. It was in the snow. So we were kind of in this linear line. And I was shoving gummy worms in my mouth. And anytime someone turned around, I would like shove them in my pocket and pretend that I wasn't doing that. And I had this moment where I was like, wow, everyone else is enjoying a hike. Like, probably everyone else is staring at the snow, staring at the mountains, how lucky we are to be here. And instead, I can't do anything except shove these gummy worms in my mouth. And so for the first time, I opened up to my husband about a lifelong of eating addiction. And but again, I didn't have words for that at the time. I just shared my experience with him. And he said, well, if you replace everything you just said to me with food, with alcohol, do you think you would have a problem? And that's when it clicked for me of like, yes, I absolutely have an addiction to this thing. And so when I first got into the rooms, I went to my first meeting in New York and I was looking around the room, scan. This is pre-pandemic, so it's in all in-person meetings, scanning the room for like the skinniest woman in the room who's going to teach me how to be spiritually thin. So I always like to say to people, your intentions and motivations coming into this program do not have to be holier than thou. You can come in with like the illest of intentions and that's fine. And so I didn't find her. But I did. I was smart enough, trained by my husband, to raise my hand and say, I'm a newcomer and I need a sponsor. And the one woman who came up to me is the woman that started me on my path of recovery. And she was so smart because I was underweight at the time because I was still bulimic. I was underweight at the time. She said to me, I don't think your problem is that you need to lose any more weight. I think you have a spiritual malady. And so she said, we're going to work the steps in 3 months. And she said, you don't need to do it perfectly. She said, if you stay in this program, you can do plenty of four steps. So, like, let's not lose sleep over it. Just do the best you can. And sorry, I feel emotional because I'm super grateful for that woman. But she, yeah, sorry. It is amazing that people do this for free. Like, she didn't ask anything of me. So we went through the steps in 3 months. And she was kind of a big book thumper. So she was really stringent with certain things. She made me go to four meetings a week and she made me start sponsoring people once I got to step six, which I was like, I'm not qualified for this. And in hindsight, I wasn't. But it was a wonderful experience just to work with newcomers and to work with people. I did the best that I could at the time. And she got me into service. So she really talked about the 12 step. And what was so amazing to me is, unlike diet programs, we talked about food very little. That was not the sponsorship I received. I received spiritual sponsorship. So we talked about my feelings. We talked about the issues that were going on in my life. We talked about the amends that I needed to make to people. We talked about my character defects, which was an interesting and painful process. And that woman completely changed my life within a year. And so my story is not unique, but is nuanced in that the first year I did gain weight because I had to gain weight. And it was really a humbling experience because I got so much like perceived power over others by thinness. And so it was really humbling to be with my friends and my family and to be at a larger body size. But I have no doubt in my mind that it's like exactly God's plan for me because it allowed me to like look people in the eye and come to realize we are lovable not because of our size or our weight. We are lovable because of the energy we bring into any room and the willingness to like really be there with and for people. So that was the first year. That continued actually for the next 3 years. And then a year and a half ago, what really changed my recovery is since I let go of all the bulimia and the restricting, the compulsive eating became so obvious to me and very destructive. And so I was willing to surrender processed sugar a year and a half ago. That was another emotional frontier for me. That was like my best friend. That was my parent. That was actually much harder for me to give up than the bulimia and the anorexia. And but I will say, a year and a half ago, when I surrendered that particular food group, my program changed entirely. And not at all implying my program wasn't great before. I truly believe everything has come in the right time. Like, you know how in the big book it says, like, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. I also just think it's if however honest you can be in that moment is good enough. And I wasn't willing to be honest about sugar for the first 3 years. But that's okay. I think that that was where I was at the time. I needed to see with stark clarity that I was powerless over the substance. But the reason why it completely changed my recovery is I really had to rely on the fellowship more because, abstaining from that substance was so intense for me. Like I said, it was my parent and my friend and my lover. It was like everything to me. And so all of a sudden, I really kicked into high gear of like attending more meetings. I'm so lucky that in Santa Cruz, we have a really wonderful in-person fellowship, but I also love Zoom meetings. I still go to LA meetings. So it's nice to have friends in many different places. And so what it's like now is it is a life beyond my wildest dreams, and it's not perfect. Like I think I had this kind of naive idea that I would reach some type of spiritual treetop in this program, and I would be, devoid of fear and pain and suffering. I thought that if I lived a perfect spiritual life, like everything would solve itself. And that's not the case. Life goes on. The difference now between my life then is I was the tornado roaring through the lives of others, and I was creating the havoc. And what's different now is life continues to be its own beautiful tornado, but what stays very still and very constant is my recovery, is my relationship with a higher power, and frankly, just a willingness to continue to be a better person. Like I was reflecting, kind of preparing for this meeting, thinking, and I don't say this lightly, but I really had a small life before recovery, and I wouldn't have called it that. I was living in New York. I was so cool. Like, what do you mean my life was small? But it was so small because all I thought that mattered was my weight and the food that I was eating or not eating, or the power that I did or did not have over people. And program has opened me up to the craziest things. And so the higher power piece, I think, is always so personal. And I don't have a defined higher power, but I certainly believe in something. And the way that I feel like it's guided my recovery has been really, really patient and gentle and kind. And so I had so much fear coming into this program of how it would change me. We just read in there was a meeting, big book meeting in person yesterday, and we read there is a solution section, and it said the doctor was saying to him, the people who do recover from diseases like this, they have huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, like vital spiritual experiences. And that is so true for me. I am not the same person I was 5 years ago, like at all. My life has changed very drastically. I don't live in New York City anymore by design. I don't even work the same job anymore by design, but I'm still married to the same person. I still have a lot of the same values, but I do feel like what OA did is it peeled back all of the layers of gunk that was hiding the person that I actually was. And the weight or the lack of weight, all of those are ways that I could mask myself and push myself away from you guys. So, vulnerability is still hard for me. It's still something I struggle with, but through the connection of this program and realizing this is the coolest thing about 12 step, in my opinion, in this program, what we're bonded over is the fact that we're all super fucked up. And I don't mean that to shade any of us or to say we're bad people. I just mean that in the most positive sense. There are so few things in life where you're in groups or communities in which you bond over theoretically like an ailment or you bond over like a character defect. But this is a safe space for me to be able to reveal the best and the worst of myself. Like, what else do you need in life? And so I will close with that. I think I just feel grateful. And again, we'll close with this thought. When I first joined the program, I kind of felt like I was a waste of space where I wasn't sponsoring anyone. I was just taking and taking and taking from the program, it felt like, because I was so new. And what I now know in hindsight is if you feel like you're not offering any of the group, your presence alone is making this whole thing happen. We wouldn't have a meeting if you guys didn't show up today. And the fact that when I joined in December 2019, and there were people in a room who were, secretary and they were treasurer and they were all these things, but they were also just the people sitting there, like, sorry, that's like a miracle. So, what the fuck? Sorry, I don't know why I'm crying so much. I'm just really grateful for you guys and grateful for this program. And thank God somebody like this exists. So thanks for letting me share.